Okay. Things should clear out Monday night, though, and it'll just be a low around 48. Tuesday should be sunny with a high near 61 and a low around 45. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Tune in to Radio for Open Ears Tuesday, May 21st, for two mythical legends on the radio. First, at 4 a.m. and 6:40 p.m., Mike Porter and Andy Reid talk about Washington Irving, the legendary American author who wrote Rip Van Winkle and The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, New York stories through and through. Then at 9 a.m. on the WGXC morning show, Catskill's Rip Van Wagner stops by High Low in Catskill to talk on the radio about Rip Van Winkle and the Awakening for Rip Van Winkle Fest scheduled for Saturday, June 22nd at Dutchman's Landing at Catskill Point. Hear Rip Van Wagner talk about Rip Van Winkle on the radio at 9 a.m. on the WGXC morning show live from High Low in Catskill, Tuesday, May 21st. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Let's start off the show. Today we've got on the show Rebecca Garrard. Garrard? Yes.
That is correct.
Rebecca Garrard is a statewide housing organizer for Citizen Action for New York, as well as the upstate coordinator for the Housing Justice for All Coalition. She's joining us now in the studio. Welcome to the studio, Rebecca.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
All right. Rebecca.
I hope I did that justice.
You did. So, Guy, listen, this lady's coming in. I know you've got fire inside your heart because you came in with jets on the back of your heels.
Indeed.
So, come on, tell us, what's up with you? What's happening? What's a sister doing out there?
So, this year we have an opportunity to pass upstate renter protections, which is historic and unprecedented.
Wow.
Yes, it's an exciting time. And it's also a time in which we need our elected officials to step up and do the right thing. So we are on the precipice of this going one way or the other. So we have nine bills under our Housing Justice for All platform, which would solidify tenants' rights to have dignified housing, the ability to advocate for themselves against predatory landlords, the ability to stay in their homes and advocate for themselves when conditions are not only inhumane and unsafe, but really protect against displacement of entire communities, which is what we see happening across the state, right? And this protections of this sort have been in place in certain areas of the state, but we've never seen legislative protections offered to anything beyond eight counties in New York City and three surrounding counties. And so this year we have legislation that would offer protections to tenants in all 62 counties. And so it's an exciting time. And yet, this is new to the elected officials outside of those eight counties. And so there's a lot of education and advocacy going on. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, therein lies the fire in a lot of us advocates.
Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a show where one of our correspondents went to May Day, and they were talking about the anti-rent wars.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That took place in this area right here in the Capital District, where wealthy landowners were establishing rents, high rents, and people couldn't pay them. And then they just kept adding and compounding it on the poor folks. And there was a war. Mm-hmm. The renters rebelled. And at that time, the historical record says that the Albany police were part of a force to enforce the rents.
Mm-hmm.
And so this area may not know about rent control,
mm-hmm.
but they know about controlling the rent.
Mm-hmm. And our governmental systems still operate under that structure, where our court systems,
mm-hmm.
through eviction processes, protect wealthy landlords,
mm-hmm.
and prey on marginalized communities, disproportionately against communities of color. And so one bill in particular is vitally important to upstate, and it would protect 4 million upstate New Yorkers and 5.5 million New Yorkers across the state. And that's called good cause eviction. And it really serves two purposes. One is it says that you cannot be evicted without good cause. Mm-hmm. And it is still astonishing to me that people think in this state that a landlord has to have a reason to evict someone. And in fact, they do not. If you do not have a lease, there is no responsibility on the part of a landlord to have cause to evict someone. They can evict them at whim. They can issue a 30-day eviction notice at whim. And so what we have in numerous situations are our most vulnerable members of our communities who, when they complain about sewage backing up mm-hmm. or a lack of heat or very reasonable complaints about their living conditions, the result of that is a 30-day eviction notice, a retaliatory eviction. And that is completely legal. And so to go to your point in how police were enforcing unconscionable rent situations, we now have the courts enforcing predatory landlord situations through enforcing eviction situations.
And this, you know, good cause eviction seems like such a straightforward, like, piece of like
Doesn't
human
really?
Rights kind of thing. Mm. How has this not been passed before?
So honestly, at first we thought a lack of education was a huge part of it. And at this point, you cannot ignore the fact that the Real Estate Board of New York has poured millions and millions of dollars in campaign money against this legislation. Because that's right.
That's where we get our email.
That's
address.
Where we and I'm gonna give them. because the reality is that there are the twisted narrative and the false narrative that we'll hear is that this is an assault on and I loathe this term. I'm gonna say it because I wanna insulate against this false narrative that it attacks the mom and pop landlords. The mom and pop landlords are not who this is going to bother. The mom and pop landlords in our communities, the people who develop within our communities are doing the right thing already, right? They're not the ones who are not providing heat to the tenants. They're not the ones who are unconscionably raising the rent. They're not the ones who are buying buildings on spec and giving 30-day eviction notices to entire buildings and displacing entire communities and gentrifying entire communities to import new residents that are, let's just call it like it is, that are whiter while displacing communities of color, right? Because they want to maximize their profits on the backs of local communities, right? That's not what mom and pop landlords do. That's not what community developers do. That's what corporate and predatory developers do.
Well, you know, there's a history in Albany in particular in the 80s where there were landlords that were allowed to buy up large blocks of several buildings at a time. They will go nameless unless he calls in. They were allowed at bottom rock prices, allowed to buy several blocks of buildings. And they painted the fronts and they got all kinds of loans and grants to improve the buildings. They started renting them out to low income people. And then immediately they stopped making repairs. And they continued to have tremendous blocks of buildings. And when they would go down to the courts, because they owned so many buildings, they were given, lenient in what they were doing.
And
they then became known as slum lords. And they're just certain names attached to certain properties that if you're an Albanian and you live in the city, you know, if you go into that person's property, he's not going to take care of it. He's not going to make repairs. And you're going to pay a lot of money to live there.
That's right. And in certain areas, what we have is when there's this monopoly on rental housing that exacerbates the fear of complaining about the conditions because you know that that is limiting your rental options.
That's right.
Because they have a monopoly on the rental housing market. And it's it is vitally important that renters have protections against landlords because right now there are none. Landlords can evict without cause. They can raise rents and displace communities without any protections on tenants. And just to give some statistics, we have in a state where we have half of our residents who are renters, half of those renters are rent burdened, and which is they pay 30%, more than 30% of their income in housing costs. A quarter of them are severely rent burdened, which means they pay more than half of their income in housing costs. And homelessness has risen since 2010 by 36%. Those statistics are interlinked, and there is a cause and effect relationship between those two. We have residents who are, we have renters who are one health scare and one car repair away from homelessness. And on any given day, we have 92,000 homeless people in this state.
Oh, you know, guy. That's the only thing I can say.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we going to do?
We ask that people call their legislators, and whether it be their assembly members or their senators, and ask that the Good Cause Eviction Bill, sponsored by Pamela Hunter and Julia Salazar, be passed. And we ask that all 9 bills on our platform be passed. They can certainly contact Citizen Action or this radio station for more information. And this radio station can refer you to me. We also
So a little birdie just told us that you've been working on a resolution for Troy Common Council as well.
Indeed. So many cities across upstate have introduced and or passed resolutions in support of this legislation because local governments recognize the need for this. And I have drafted a resolution for Troy that is ready and waiting for a Common Council member to introduce it. So if there is a Troy Common Council member listening who is ready to make that move, I'll be happy to supply them with that document.
That would be really exciting if our city council would take some decisive action on rent.
It would be really great for the community.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of my family lives in Albany, and many members of my family are renters in Albany. What's the Albany landscape like in terms of the mayor's office and those folks? How are they in terms of being open to some sort of rent control?
So I will name names. So we have the Common Council being very supportive at this point. So this coming Monday, if anybody who lives in Albany wants to come to the Common Council meeting, we have a rent resolution there being introduced. Kelly Kimbrough and some of his Common Council member peers have been supportive of that. And then it will be further discussed on the 30th. I wish I could say that the assembly members representing Albany have been as supportive, but I cannot say that to you. I can tell you that State Senator Neil Breslin has been. So if anybody who lives in Albany would like to call their assembly members, we could certainly use some support on that end, because there seems to be a misunderstanding about the fact that Albany does not need these protections, and the tenants in Albany do not need these protections, and that we need to focus more on development rather than tenants. And so I think I think the tenants in Albany need to remind our elected officials that they deserve representation too.
Guy.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for all of the work you're doing. I feel like so grateful for this this amazing, you know, the work that you're doing to try to protect tenants' rights. I wonder if you have any parting words before we have to move on. Yeah.
Well, I'm just really thankful for you all having me on the show. And I think this is a moment where, in a time when we often feel voiceless and that we don't have an opportunity to impact change as citizens, this is a movement that is rooted in and driven by citizens and renters and grassroots change. So if you are listening to this and you feel that you couldn't possibly be a part of this movement, yes, you can. And you are going to be the reason that we get something done. So reach out to me And at Citizen Action, I will even give my phone number, 845-797-9210. And I will happily put you to work, because this is how we're gonna make this happen.
Well, Rebecca, we want you back. We want you to come back and give us an update. We want to know whether you win or lose. We want you coming back. And if you win, we want you to name names. And if you lose, we want you to name names, okay?
I will happily do that.
We just want 10 minutes of names.
I will do it. Let's do it. Roll call.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Rebecca. That was Rebecca Garrard of Citizen Action speaking with us about rent control for New York State.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. La lluvia cae, el río nos guía. La lluvia cae.
That was Resiliencia from Albany, New York singer-songwriter Tanya Asili from her 2019 album of the same title.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeple. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Howie Hawkins. He's been a recent Green Party candidate for governor in New York State and is presently exploring the possibility of running for president as a Green Party candidate. Howie, where are you in that process?
Well, it's going to be almost 2 months by the end of May. And we're coming to a conclusion. In fact, I've set up a date in Brooklyn on May 28th to announce my decision as whether we'll run or not. And either way I decide, we are going to release a detailed Green New Deal plan that has the costs and the sources of funds for an expanded Green New Deal that's not just about converting the electric power sector or even energy for transportation, but all productive sectors, because you can't get to 100% clean energy without changing everything from agriculture to transportation, manufacturing, buildings. So we need a green reconstruction of the economy. So that's the Green New Deal plus what we've called an economic bill of rights, going back to Roosevelt, the right to a job, an income, a decent home, a comprehensive health care, and a good education. So we're going to cost that all out and show where the money will come from and how many jobs it will create. So we're going to release that on May 28th, and if I do run, that's obviously going to be the centerpiece of my platform. So the formal announcement will be then, and so after that, I'm going on the road. So people can draw their own conclusions, but as far as the FEC is concerned at this point, I'm still testing the waters.
Now, obviously the Green Party does have a lot of difference of opinions with the Democrats, but one thing a lot of people don't seem to pay attention to in America is the fact that, in fact, the two major parties have a very similar policy when it comes to foreign affairs. I don't know if you wanted to maybe say a few words about the Venezuela situation, and also, you know, what would you do in terms of the size of the purpose of the military budget?
Well, in the Venezuela situation, there is a bill saying the U.S. can't go change the regime in Venezuela by a military intervention, but it's only got 58 co-sponsors. That tells you where it's at. There is a progressive fringe of the Democratic Party in Congress that is opposed to this, but the leadership of the Democratic Party is right there with Donald Trump saying, we're threatening you with military intervention to Venezuela. And that's a bipartisan foreign policy that we've had, which is based on a global U.S. military empire to make the world safe for global corporations. And what the Green Party calls for is, let's be the world's humanitarian superpower. Let's have a global Green New Deal. Let's make friends instead of enemies. That's how you build peace, and that's how you build prosperity around the world. The military-industrial complex is a total drain on our society. It takes our human capital, the technological know-how, our engineers, and our manufacturing plant and builds weapons of destruction. When we need clean energy, we need affordable housing, we have real needs. And we is not just us in this country, it's in every country. And that's what we should be devoting our resources to. The only reason the military-industrial complex gets away with this is what they call the Iron Triangle between the Pentagon, the arms contractors, and Congress. And they put military installations in every damn congressional district, and then all the members of Congress feel they can't go against that military thing in their district. Like Bernie Sanders, the most progressive Democrat running for president, he's got the F-35 being based in South Burlington, so he's for it, even though John McCain said this is a waste of money and the thing doesn't work.
Now, there are certainly some liberal Democrats who say, hey, you know, we really love the Green Party's agenda, love Howie Hawkins, but, you know, Trump's the worst president ever in American history, and, you know, corruption and, you know, rise of nationalism and fascism, we need the Green Party to stand down and ensure that we replace, you know, Trump with, you know, electing a Democratic president this year or next year.
We need the Democratic Party to impeach that man's sorry behind. I mean, this guy's got a 40-year-long rap sheet, and only a rich white man in this country could have that kind of rap sheet. All those crimes, from sexual assault, all kinds of corporate crime, to abuse of power, contempt of Congress, and it goes on and on and on. Only a man like that could be walking free when the Democrats could impeach him right now. That's why we need a Green Party. The Democrats don't know how to fight the right. The Republicans are packing the courts. They're gerrymandering, so they're a minority, but they control the Senate. They did control the House. They control a lot of state legislatures. The Democrats had an election stolen from 2000 by the Supreme Court, and they didn't stand up in the Senate when they could have and object to the count from Florida and got the process going again. They rolled over. And that's why we need a Green Party, because right now the right is winning and the Democrats are accommodating them. I think they want Trump in there to use him as a, you know, scare tactic to raise funds. And that kind of cynical politics has got to stop. We'll fight the right. And right now we're demanding impeachment. And what are the Democrats waiting for? And if we stand down, Democrats not going to get the pressure they're going to get if we're in there.
I guess probably their response will be, yes, everything you said is correct, but the reality is the Green Party is not going to win the next election, and so therefore we just got to get out and combine all our votes to defeat Trump.
Go defeat him. You're going to have billions of dollars to defeat him. The little Green Party's, we're going to be lucky to raise a million or two for a presidential campaign. Don't punch to your left and down. Punch at Donald Trump. You know, this guy should not be getting away with what he's getting, and the Democrats have been too nice to him. So worry about Trump and worry about yourselves. Don't worry about us. You don't represent us because we have a different program, and don't suppress our vote. The Republicans suppress the vote by making it so damn hard to get on the ballot and then attacking us when we submit our petitions. The Democrats are engaged in voter suppression, too. Remember, almost half the people don't vote. That's mostly working people. And they are so disgusted with both parties, they don't vote. And that's why, you know, that's who we're going after. So, you know, leave us alone. We have a right to be here. That's democracy. And go out and get your votes.
Now, you know, liberals were sort of hoping that when the Democrats took control of the state Senate from the Republicans, that finally we would see things pass like single-payer health care, campaign finance reform, and the strongest climate legislation possible, none of which has happened yet. Why is that?
Because the Democrats, like the Republicans, respond more to their donors than to their voters. And look at public campaign finance. You know, Speaker Heastie saying, oh, now, after they passed it a number of years, if we got public campaign finance, the independent expenditures will overwhelm us. So we're not going to have public campaign financing. Whether you have public campaign financing or not, the independent expenditures are out there anyway. So what the hell is he talking about? He wants to get money from his usual sources, which is not public, it's private. And so do a lot of his members. So they feed us a line about public campaign financing, but they don't really mean it. Same thing with single-payer health care, same thing with the kind of climate action that we really need. You go right down the list. The idea that the Democrats would pass all this substantive progressive legislation was nonsense, and we're seeing that play out right now. The easy stuff, you know, the very...